You may think you know everything there is to know about the third gift, but as you'll soon discover, there's much more to it than meets the eye. Most people use it as a blunt force object with very mixed and often very negative results. In this session, Bob and Mary will illuminate the lesser understood aspects of this extremely powerful faculty and show you how to wield it for maximum effectiveness.
When President John Kennedy asked Dr. Wernher von Braun what it would take to build a rocket that would carry a man to the moon and bring him back safely to Earth, von Braun answered him in five words: the will to do it. Let me read you something that I found long time ago. The will is of such primary importance that the student should be on his guard against any mistake as to the position which it holds in the mental economy. Many writers and teachers insist upon willpower as though that were the creative power or the creative faculty. No doubt intense willpower can evolve certain external results, but like all other methods of compulsion, it lacks the permanency of natural growth. The appearances, forms, and conditions produced by mere intensity of willpower will only hang together so long as the compelling force continues, but let it be exhausted or withdrawn, and the elements thus forced into unnatural combination will at once fly back to their proper affinities. The form created by compulsion never had the germ of vitality in itself. Willpower, we think of that as some mental strength that forces things to happen. That is not how the will works at all. We talk about free will and predestination. You've heard that term. Well, the will is that mental faculty that gives you the ability to hold one idea on the screen of your mind to the exclusion of all outside distractions. Let's suppose that you're in a situation or at a point in your life where the conditions or circumstance, even the people possibly around you, are anything but positive. It seems like there's a strong force outside of you wanting you to lose or wanting you to go in the wrong direction. How can you handle that? You can handle that with a highly evolved will. We've already spoken in a previous exercise about the use of the imagination in the development of the image of exactly what you want to accomplish with your life, with your business, with your relationships, whatever it is. But you build a picture of the ideal situation that you want. It's your will that enables you to hold that picture on the screen of the mind to the exclusion of all these outside negative distractions. And by holding that picture, eventually it's deposited in the treasury of the subconscious. That's where the power then is created. And that picture being impressed upon the subconscious begins to express itself in actions, in vibrations, and it also sets up a very strong attractive force. The will, giving you the ability to hold that picture to the exclusion of anything else, we refer to that act as concentration. When you concentrate on the good that you desire, and you've penetrated the depths of your subjective or your subconscious mind, you have created a passageway where the power flows into your consciousness. It immediately moves into the form that you're holding the image of, and then flows on into the subjective mind. What you're really doing is going to spirit or universal intelligence for a power, for an energy to create the image of the good that you desire. It's your will that's holding that picture there, and by holding it, you create the passage, the highway, for that power to flow into the subconscious. You've actually created a channel for pure, unadulterated spirit to move to and through you. By you going to spirit for the power, the energy to build the image, and then turn it back over to spirit or universal intelligence, through the reciprocal law of spirit, it gives it back to you in physical form. Now, I agree, if you're a relatively new student in this nature of study, You could say, well, that's really a mouthful. It is a mouthful, but it's also a truth, and it's a beautiful concept that you can practice. The will is the part of your personality that gives you the ability to concentrate. I will come back a little later on in this particular lesson and explain exercises you can get involved in to develop the will, and also the tremendous benefit that accrues to you by holding one picture on the screen of the mind, because you set up a power that you can get no other way.
Years and years ago, as I began to study this material, someone said to me, if willpower were powerful, every single New Year's resolution that we all make would last. So when you shared that this willpower, we can actually force something for a short amount of time, but when we don't allow the real power to move through us by holding in a concentrated way the image that we want, it's a completely different level of power. This kind of will that you're speaking about, Bob, and what we commonly know as willpower. So what we want to invite you to do is take a deep breath and bring to mind the picture of the life that you're imagining. Just bring it to mind and imaginally move inside of it. Keep that focus. You're using a power right now that requires no force. It's something that pulls you forward because you love this image. So you want to dwell inside the image in your mind. As you do that, what'll happen, of course, there are circumstances in your life that are unlike the image you're holding in your mind. But you want to remember something. You can never get to where you want to get from where you are. You can't get to your dream. It's actually impossible to get from where you are right now to your dream. You have to come from your dream. You can have anything you're willing to become, and where you become the thing you want is first in the vibration that is harmonious with the picture that you're holding. So if, in fact, you were living the life you're imagining, you would feel grateful. So you use your will to establish the vibrational pattern of gratitude, even in the absence of the current experience of the thing you say you want. So here's an example of this. Norman Vincent Peale told a story once about a time when he was heading off to speak for 5,000 people. He had flown all day long. He was tired. When he got there, over the course of being in the airplane, his vocal cords had tightened up. When he got off the plane and he went to get his luggage and asked for help to get a taxi, he noticed that he hardly had any voice at all. And he was going to speak in about 4 hours, and there were 5,000 people waiting there for him to speak. And from the point of getting in the taxi to getting to the hotel, his voice went from a low hoarseness down to a bare whisper. And he began to worry what was going to happen when he had to get up and speak that night. So he gargled and he prayed. But he said the whole time he was thinking, my gosh, 5,000 people are going to be here tonight. Maybe I could whisper louder. And he tried to figure out what to do. And then finally he asked the hotel to send a doctor. So they did that. And when the doctor got there, Peale kind of barely whispered out, I need some help. Bring me some medicine. Spray my throat. I'm supposed to speak to 5,000 people tonight. And the doctor came, sprayed his throat, gave him some medicine, and then the doctor said to him, Dr. Peale, I have sprayed your throat. I have given you some pills, but now I would like to give you the same treatment that you have given the rest of us. I want to give you the treatment that will really help you. And Peale says, well, why are you waiting? And he says, because I didn't think I would have to give it to you. Well, what do you mean? You're the one who taught me about the power of the will. You taught me that the prescription is to take my mind off the problem and put it on the image of what I want to create. Take your mind off your vocal cords. Put it on the mind of God. Put it on the mind of the infinite. Put it on the mind that has the perfected idea of you. And Peale wrote about it when he said, it was like a bolt of lightning to me. I had spent all these hours focusing on the problem, focusing on how it would be if I couldn't speak, focusing on, could I whisper louder? I was focusing on the problem, and the answer was to take my mind off the problem and put it on the answer, put it on the power that is everywhere present, that has a perfected idea of me in it. So the will is your ability to take your mind off what look like the circumstances and seem like the situations and the issues that would prevent you from living the life you want to live and put yourself into the life you're imagining. Walk around inside of it, feel it, and know that the person who's living that life you're imagining does some of the things you're doing now. They drive a car. They may do some laundry. They may do some dishes. They may make phone calls. So you imaginally put yourself inside being that person, even when you're doing some of the things you're doing now. And over and over throughout the day, you keep that picture in your mind, and then you begin to notice that things really do begin to shift.
Another person said essentially the same thing the doctor gave Dr. Peel when he gave him his answer back. He said, we're aiming at consciously controlling our mental powers instead of letting them hurry us hither and thither in a purposeless manner. And we must therefore understand the relation of these powers to each other for the production of external results. If using the word in its wisest sense, we may say the imagination is the creative function, as we call the will the centralizing principle. Its function is to keep the imagination centered in the right direction. Now, that's really what the will does. The development of the will has to be one of the most important factors in the achievement of a goal or moving in the right direction you want to move. You know, and I know, we live in a very fast-moving world. Things are flying at us faster now than they ever have before in the history of civilization. Our means of communication is going at a rapid clip. The world is not very big any longer. It's shrinking. We're living in a very small marketplace when we're in a global marketplace. With all this going on around us, if we don't learn how to center our mind and hold an image of the good that we desire, we automatically are going to become the plaything for outside forces. And when that starts happening, you start losing. Now, you may say, well, how do you develop a will? How do you get to the point where you can hold the one idea on the screen of the mind and block out all these outside distractions? You have to practice concentrating. What I often tell people in seminars to do is take a candle in a candle holder, put it opposite your favorite chair. And then those times when you're home alone or you're up late at night by yourself, turn the TV off, turn the radio off, light the candle, and stare at the flame. Now, you'll only be staring at the flame for a very brief period of time, maybe a couple of seconds, and your mind will start wandering. Thoughts will run through your mind, and they will take you to another place. When that happens, just bring your mind right back to the flame. Every time your mind wanders, bring it right back to the flame. And don't feel bad for 1 second. What's happened's happened. Let it go. Come back to the flame. Until you and become one with the flame. This is how you develop the ability to concentrate. As you develop the ability to concentrate, that's when you're developing the ability to make proper use of the will and not improper use of it. You may take a pencil or a pen and put a dot on a wall, the opposite wall to your favorite chair. And every time you sit in the chair, stare at that dot. No one will notice it. If they do, they'll think it's a fly and they won't pay any attention to it. Just stare at that dot until your mind becomes one with the dot. Now, your mind may wander. Bring it right back to the dot until you and the dot become one. Now, you will learn how to concentrate for long periods of time. Some of these Eastern mystics, the yogis, they can concentrate for hours, but that's a very highly evolved mind. You see, your mind is much like your body. If you exercise the body, it becomes very strong. If you don't exercise it, it becomes very weak. The mind is exactly the same. Your will, like your intuition and your imagination, they're mental muscles, and you can develop tremendous strength in these mental muscles. Now, think of this for a moment. Awareness of vibration is called feeling. If you're standing maybe in a supermarket or a store or anywhere in the office and someone's behind you staring at you, you feel it. You do, don't you? You can feel it. Now, you may turn around and sure enough, you see somebody stand there staring. No, they'll look away and maybe walk away. How did you feel that? When they're concentrating on you, they have brought one image on the screen of the mind, you. And all the power that's flowing into their consciousness is being directed right back at you. Your brain is picking up that strong vibration. It's like a bolt of lightning coming at your brain. You feel it. It's a very strong feeling. That's what concentration is. If you're selling, you want to be able to concentrate on what? On helping your prospect do what you tell them you can do. Concentration is the key in everything if you want to be a real professional. Watch the professional dancers. Watch the professional figure skaters. It's always amazed me how the man will lift the woman and maybe throw her up in the air and catch her right at the perfect spot. And they do it right every time. And in the meanwhile, they're going like blazes on skates on the ice. How are they doing that? They're not paying attention to the audience. They're in perfect harmony with the music, and they're concentrating on what they're doing. We've got to learn to concentrate on what we're doing. The more we concentrate, the shorter the period of time it takes to get to where we're going. Concentration increases amplitude of vibration. In other words, when you concentrate, you're giving more power to whatever you're concentrating on. Now, if you're concentrating on your goal, you're giving more power. You're giving more energy to your goal. Your energy is not scattered. It's not like a spray nozzle on a garden hose. It's more like a straight stream. The power is flowing into your consciousness, and it's going out in one direction toward your goal. It becomes very, very powerful. Emerson said, "The only thing that can grow is the thing you're giving energy to." Concentration increases amplitude of vibration. You're giving more power to your goal. The average person couldn't concentrate for more than a couple of seconds. 10 seconds would probably shatter a family record. You can develop this ability. I've worked at developing it for a long time. When I first began to study this, close to 50 years ago, I was a loser. I couldn't earn any money. I didn't have any friends. I had never done anything well in my whole life. As I started to study this, I realized that winning had to do with specializing. Specializing had to do with focus. And what we want to do is pick a niche, pick what we love to do, and then focus on it. All my attention is focused on the work I'm involved in. I absolutely love it, and I know I get better at it all the time. I recently spoke at a meeting. It was at the Napoleon Hill Foundation. It was an anniversary meeting. And there were people there that hadn't heard me speak for a number of years. And they come up and they said, "You know, you just keep getting better." Well, I know I keep getting better. And I don't mean this as an egotistical statement. I mean it is that I'm aware I'm getting better, and I should get better because I work at getting better. I focus. I concentrate on what I'm doing. That's what we want to recommend you do. Get the candle. Get the dot on the wall. Get the understanding that comes as a result of studying each one of these messages, because your mental power is beyond description. The most erudite scientist alive cannot even guess at what you're capable of doing. Listen to what Mary has to say about this.
In the East, they call the mind the jumping monkey, and that every one of us must learn to tether that if we want real power to flow through us. So Bob has given us a very clear description about how we can do this and how we can exercise our capacity to tether the jumping monkey. In other words, to really sharpen the frequency with which the thought moves through us toward a desired goal. So in the room that you're in right now, whether you have electric light on or it's sunlight in your room, the light waves where you are just go everywhere. It fills the room with light. The only difference between the light in the room where you are right now and laser is one thing. Now, laser will cut through steel. The light in the room where you are right now is not going to cut through steel. It would require something for the same light waves to cut through steel. And that one thing is focus. When you learn to focus your mind on a desired goal, see it, feel it, stay focused on it, become one with it. That focus is called your will. No matter what the conditions are in your life, all sorts of things begin to happen. So you're sitting there, you're looking at the candle, you're looking at the dot on the wall, and your mind wanders. And then you'll start thinking about, I got to remember to get the car lubed, or I got to remember to do this, or I should have checked my email. The mind is full of distraction. So you're learning to dispel the distraction and come back to the one point. Not because the candle is so important and not because the dot on the wall is important, but your ability to focus is very important. It's your capacity then to take that same power and move it towards your desired end. Lincoln was facing a big issue. The issue was whether or not he should write a proclamation that would completely change the way our country operated. It was during the Civil War, and it was during a particularly difficult time for him. And he was struggling with this aspect of leadership, so he sent for a friend of his who was a fellow lawyer who lived in Springfield, Illinois, and he asked for the friend to come to Washington, D.C. to a meeting. His friend's name was Leonard Swett, and Swett traveled all the way across the country. They got together, and Swett would write later that he sat in the Oval Office with Lincoln, and Lincoln began to describe to him the struggle he was facing about whether or not he should write a proclamation abolishing slavery. Lincoln listed all the pros. He listed all the cons. He listed what everybody was saying, what some people would say, what other people were saying, back and forth, back and forth. And Swett said that Lincoln spoke about this for hours. Lincoln talked and talked and talked about the many different ideas that he had, the thoughts that he had, what other people were saying, what would happen if he did this, what would happen if he did that, what was right for the country, on and on and on. And Swett would say that 7 hours later, Lincoln stood up, looked at him, and said, "Thank you for coming. I have my answer now." He never once asked Swett's opinion. He just asked him to sit there so that he would help hold the space so that Lincoln could concentrate, so he could go through his mind and look at this situation from every possible angle until he came to absolute clarity about what he wanted to do. Now, there are many different ways to concentrate, but this is one. You sit across from a candle, you learn to harness your mind. You sit across from a dot on the wall, you learn to harness your mind. You learn to tether the monkey, the power. When Bob said, until you become one with it. And when you become one with it, there is a moment when you are no longer the person sitting looking at the candle. You are no longer the person sitting looking at the dot. You and the candle are one. You and the dot are one. And that is an experience to be had. When you learn to do this, you will find that you have an access point, a portal to the power of the mind of the infinite. And that portal power is right where you are.
I want you to imagine you're in a good-sized room in your own home. And let's suppose you have a candle beside your chair where you're sitting. And you see something on the opposite side of the room, but you would have a very difficult time determining exactly what it is because the candle power does not stretch that far. It's scattered all over the place. But with the flashlight, take the same candle power and you could illuminate the other side of the room and none of the other light would be wasted. It's all directed where you want it to go. Then Mary took and referred this to a laser beam. The laser's very, very powerful force. But it is puny relative to your thought. Thought energy is the most potent form of energy in the universe. Thought energy is cosmic energy. It penetrates all time and all space. And as you begin to concentrate, you make a connection with the universe that you are one with. Listen to what Ken Wilber had to say. "Let a radical realization shine from our faces and roar from our hearts and thunder from our brains this simple fact that you, in the immediate, the very immediateness of your present awareness, are in fact connected to the entire world. In all its frost and fever, in all its glories and grace, in all its triumph and its tears, you do not see the sun, you are the sun. You do not hear the rain, you are the rain. You do not feel the earth, you are the earth. And in that simple, clear, unmistakable regard, you have transformed into the very heart of the cosmos itself. And there, right there, very simply, very quietly, all separation is undone. And you have become one with an infinite power. And through the proper use of the will, you've connected to it. And you've directed the whole universe toward the good that you desire. Oh, I know, if you're a new student in this particular train of thought, that may sound preposterous, but anyone that has even studied a little bit sees the truth in this. And there's something in you that knows what I'm saying is true. There's something in you that knows what Mary's explaining is true. When you hear the truth, you will know it. Now, let me explain that to you. There's music in the room where you stand. If you're standing outside, there's music there. You may not hear it, but it's there. It's being broadcast on a certain frequency. Because your ears are not tuned in on that frequency, you don't hear the music. There's movie pictures going on, great classics. There's television going on right where you are. Now, you don't see it because your eyes don't operate on that frequency. But if you were to turn on a radio, instantly and automatically, that music would be picked up by a receiver and it would be sent out by another broadcaster on the frequency that your ears operate on, and you'd hear it. If you turned on your television, the television would pick up through the receiver and send it back out on a frequency that your eyes are operating on, and you would see the movie. It's always been there. It took a change of vibration for you to see it. Well, when you hear the truth resonates with the essence of who you are. The essence of who you are is perfect. Oh, you may have difficulty accepting that, but you are perfect. You're a perfect expression of an infinite power. You are the offspring of a deathless soul. Your spiritual DNA is perfect. The very center of your consciousness is where perfection lies. And your objective in this life is to attempt to express as much of that as you can. The more aware of it you become, the more it's manifest in your life. Well, when you hear the truth resonates with the essence of who you are. And then it sets up another vibration on your conscious level called knowing. You may not understand it, but you know it's right. You may not understand everything you're hearing here, but you know it's good, and you know it's right. And you keep studying this, and you're going to understand it. And when you understand it, it will begin to manifest in your life. And that's when your results change. That's why Solomon said, in all you're getting, get understanding. Understanding is the flip side of the coin to worry and doubt. I don't think you want to worry and doubt. Well, you have to understand. The only way to develop understanding is through study. There is no other way. You've got to study. And when you have understanding, when you understand how your will functions, how you can use it for the manifestation of the good that you desire, when you understand how your creative faculty, the imagination, truly works, how your intuition truly works, is going to cause you to jump hurdles that you never thought you could ever go over.
The power that you and I wield with our thinking is immense, way beyond anything that we understand. So learning to use the will gives us access to the power we have within ourselves to notice what we're noticing. And as we notice what we notice, which is noticing the candle, and then you notice when you're not noticing the candle, then you come back to noticing the candle, that increases your muscle power in staying focused on what you want to stay focused on. But before that, till you decided to learn that, your mind would just wander all over the place. Emerson said, stand guard at the portal of your mind. To stand guard at the place where you choose what thought you will think about. Now, Carl Jung says what Bob's saying a little bit differently. He says, the evidence of this is all about you. Take up some violent form of exercise, rowing, tennis, swimming, writing. In the beginning, your muscles are weak and easily tired. But keep on for a few days, and the life principle promptly strengthens them, toughens them to meet their new need. Do rough manual labor, and what happens? The skin of your hands becomes tender, blisters perhaps, or hurts, but keep it up. Does the skin all wear off? On the contrary, the life principle provides extra thickness, extra toughness, calluses even, we call them, to meet the need. All through your daily life, you will find that this power is with you, steadily at work. So embrace it, work with it, take it to yourself. There is nothing you cannot do. But you must develop the power that you have within you to meet the need that is the answer to the question you have or the life you'd like to bring. The mere fact that you have obstacles to overcome is in your favor. For when there is nothing to be done, when things run along too smoothly, this life principle seems to sleep. It's when you need it, when you call upon it urgently, that it is most on the job. Now, we have that power in us, and we learn to call upon it, harness it, and shape it in the direction of our desired good through the amplified power of our will.
Think of the time when you were a little child. You would take a magnifying glass and you'd go out. The sun would be beating down on you. It would be warm, but not hot. You'd take the magnifying glass and you'd marshal that great power, and you'd bring it to a white-hot bead with the magnifying glass, and you'd burn leaves. You'd burn yourself. You'd start a fire because you took that energy and it was focused. That's what a magnifying glass does. That's what your will does.
In addition to the candle exercise, There is an exercise that I'll give you now that will help you be in touch with the part of you that is greater than any circumstance you're facing, the part of you that can actually choose the life that you want to live, the part of you that is not held or bound back or constricted by no matter what has happened in your life or no matter what you're facing right now. Just take a deep breath. And if you're in a place you can and it's comfortable, go ahead and let your eyes close. And just for a moment, notice your body. Notice the feeling of your shoes on your feet or the feeling of your feet on the floor. Notice your body. Notice your knees, your shoulders, your wrists, your fingertips, your nose, your ears. Notice your body. Notice the feeling of your clothing as it touches your skin. Notice your body. Notice the feeling of the air gently caressing your exposed skin. Notice your body. Now for a moment, notice your thoughts, what you've been thinking. You may have been thinking about the content of this message you're listening to, Bob's voice, my voice, our stories, our information. You may have been thinking about what you need to do next week. But without judgment, just notice what you've been thinking. Notice your thoughts. Now for a moment, notice what you've been feeling. Whether you've been feeling excited or scared or happy or sad or worried or interested, bored, whatever you've been feeling, just notice what you've been feeling. And now ask yourself this question: who is it that can notice my body but is not my body? Who is it in me that, should I lose my hand, I don't say I lost me, I say I lost my hand? Who is it that can notice my body but is not my body? Who is it that can notice my thoughts but is never controlled or constricted by any one thought or defined by a thought? Who is it in me that can actually say yes or no to thoughts as they begin to come to my mind? Who is it that can notice what I am feeling but is never controlled, constricted by any one emotion? Who can actually say, I don't want to feel that, I choose a different feeling, a different thought? Who is that? That is the authentic you. It is your real self. You are spirit having a human experience. And as spirit, you have all the capacities of spirit. So you have dimensions of yourself that we're leading you into and instructing you and helping you understand now with these different gifts of spirit. You use the mind of the infinite to think with. It is an infinite mind. There's not one thing you could think up for which there isn't an answer. There's not one problem you could ever have for which there isn't a solution. There's not one difficulty you could ever have for which there isn't the power that is right with you for the overcoming of that. And it's right here. When I found this out, when Bob found this out, when we began to practice developing these gifts so that they were in our conscious awareness, it was like walking out of an attic to a front door where there was a technicolor world of opportunity right here where I was, and all I could see was the darkness. And all the while, there was a doorway. And the door handle on that doorway is your will. As you learn to focus your will, you learn how to open that door and find this new world.
The will comes forward and directs the imagination to form the necessary spiritual prototype. And the imagination, thus centered on a particular object, creates the spiritual nucleus, which in turn acts as a center around which the forces of attraction begin to work and continue to operate until, by the law of growth, the concrete result becomes perceptible to our external senses. Remember we said you built the image, and the image must move into form. That's governed by law. The perpetual transmutation of energy. We can literally take through the use of the will and our imagination and build the world we choose.
Recognize that you have been given the power to choose to think about whatever you want. So choose and then focus. You're now in touch with the power that creates worlds, and that power is within you.
The true power of the gift of will lies not in its ability to affect, but in its ability to attract. Using the insights and strategies Bob and Mary have shared in this session, you will be able to use your will to draw into your life all the things you desire as easily and surely as a magnet. Now let's turn to the next session, where Bob and Mary will introduce you to the fourth of your six gifts.